This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Our guest today is Lawrence Krauss. He's a professor of physics, a public advocate for science, and was described by the Scientific American as a public intellectual. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be on the show again.
Well, a return guest. This whole show really is sort of about the intersection of science and politics, science and public policy. In the public arena, how's science faring?
Well, it's not faring very well at all. I mean, lip service is paid, but this particular administration has had a war on science since before it came in. And I mean, it's epitomized, of course, by Scott Pruitt and what the EPA is doing. But the willingness, you know, there used to be, and it's not new to politics, for politicians to distort the results of science to push their political agenda. It's been going on as long as they're politicians, probably. But what's interesting is that people would often ignore science, but in this administration, both lie about it and censor it and try and suppress it. I mean, interestingly, to try and say, for example, that we don't want scientific advisors. Look, scientists should not be making policy, but they should, unless they're elected, that they should be providing the empirical evidence that should be the basis of public policy. And what we're seeing is amazing in the EPA and various other places where they're saying, well, we want to get rid of scientists from advisory panels and replace them with lobbyists. I mean, it's shocking. And it's in all levels of this administration. And we ignore science at our peril, because science isn't democratic or Republican or associated with any political party. It is the basis of making sound public policy that helps us all for the future.
You know, I went and I said, well, what is making this possible? I went and looked at public opinion data, which is what I do, and said, what's the stature of scientists and has that changed? And interestingly, I was a little bit surprised. Yeah. I said, it's probably taken a hit. Answer is, the stature of scientists, the believability of scientists since the 70s, when these were first measured, has been flat.
It's been constant. But scientists are trusted, yeah.
But a number of specific issues. This is a poll measuring, a Pew poll, high-quality stuff. Uh-huh. The opinions of the U.S. public versus the members of the American Association for Advancement of Scientists. So it has a pool of, quote scientists. Yeah. Not a bad representation. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it safe to eat genetically modified foods? U.S. population, 37%. AAAS members, 88%. Favor use of animals in research, public, 47%. Scientists, 89%. Safe to eat food grown with pesticides, public, 28%. Scientists, 68%. Climate change, mostly due to human activity. The public, 50%. Scientist, 87%. I say, why only 87?
I know exactly. You wonder what.
But I got three more here. Humans have evolved over time. Public, 65. Scientist, 98. Favorite building more nuclear plants, 45 amongst the public, 65 amongst scientists. Childhood vaccines such as MMR should be required. 68% of the public, 86% of science. So pretty wide variation.
Well, even in the last one, I'm surprised only 86% among the scientists. It's kind of sad. But, of course, the AAAS is a very broad group, so let's give them that. But there is a great variation. I think what it points out is a number of things, is that scientists are not doing as effective a job reaching out and explaining what the context of proper decision should be. And I think it's a combination of not reaching out and in some sense, not being allowed. I mean, that the media doesn't provide necessarily a forum for that sort of much more interesting salacious stuff. And I think it's what it really comes down to, and I've said this in a number of contexts, is a improper understanding of what science is all about. And it's particularly important in the context of the sort of fake news, the current worries about news on the internet, that science is not a set of facts. And I think many people think it's a set of facts that we memorize. It's a process for deriving facts. It's a process for distinguishing sense from nonsense. That process is really important. And we don't teach that in schools enough. I think we teach it as a bunch of facts that you have to memorize or whatever. We need to teach science as a series of questions that get people thinking and open-ended questions, because we don't have all the answers. And then, you know, people say, well, scientists have one set of facts, these other people have another set of facts, and, you know, who am I to decide? But that's not the case. The great thing about science is that there aren't two sides to every story in many cases. One side is just wrong. And you can present people that appear eloquent, well-dressed, and all sorts of...
And often with credentials.
Often with credentials. That's the other thing. Having a PhD means nothing, okay? It means you have a PhD. But you can find, in fact, I was talking to a French journalist recently who was at a conference of 300 supposed PhDs about a flat earth, right? I mean, you can find a PhD to say anything about anything. And it gives the public this perception or misperception that there are controversies when there aren't. Because journalists often say, okay, well, I've got to get two sides to this argument. So I'll interview this scientist and I'll find someone who says the opposite, right? And then they present it as it's sort of he should see, she said, as a kind of, you know, two people who both sound reasonable, and the public said, unbiased public would say, well, they both sound reasonable. I don't know who's right. But it's unfair. I mean, I remember many years ago when I was first debating whether evolution should be intelligent or intelligent design should be included in high school science curricula. This was way back in Ohio, long ago. What I said, they put us up in front of 1,800 people, and it was me and a well-known biologist, Ken Miller, who's written biology books, and two members of some group called the Discovery Institute, which is a sort of creationist think tank. And they put us up there, and I said, well, look, this isn't fair, because it gives you the impression that, you know, it's just there's a controversy. What there should be is 20,000 scientists on one side of this table and these two guys from the Discovery Institute on the other, because that would give a proper representation. So I think part of it is the problem is journalists needing to feel like there are two sides, wanting to, you know, controversy sells better than non-controversy, and a misunderstanding of what science is, as if, you know, different sets of facts are equally acceptable. And the facts come from empirical evidence, and that's science. That's the only place the facts come from. And there's no debating that. The scientific community, I think, has an uphill battle, always had, in terms of many of the results of science counter naive intuition. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's what science is all about, is learning how to overcome your intuition, overcome your misconceptions. That's what learning is all about, to suddenly discover something you thought was right was actually wrong. That's opens your mind and opens your mind to critical thinking. And it is also... People are so are risk averse in a kind of interesting way. So they'll read one story online and you know, take vaccines. The whole vaccine thing started from one ex-doctor who published a totally incorrect study about vaccines in autism, which was withdrawn, and he lost his license. But once it's there, you have all these fearmongers who are able to say, let's not trust the quote-unquote establishment. And that's another big part of it, is this sense that there's a sense that somehow scientists have an agenda and are a political agenda or an anti-religious agenda at times. And the agenda of scientists, the reason science works is it overcomes the bias of scientists. The agenda of science is to just uncover how things work.
Interesting, the comment about... You know, one of the things is about science. You got an agenda and you're going to somehow enhance your career. I think what people don't get is if you can actually come up with something that debunks what everybody else in the world believes, that is the most career enhancing thing you could possibly
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. I've said that. You hit the point. You made a really good point here. What most scientists do every day is they come into work trying to prove their colleagues wrong. Because that's what makes you well-known. And absolutely, if you could somehow demonstrate definitively that evolution or climate change, you know, some fundamental results that we know that have been verified to are somehow wrong, you'd, as you say, become famous. I mean, it takes a while. The point is scientists are human. That's maybe a well-kept secret. But so they do have biases. But and so, you know, I wrote a book recently, The Great Story Ever Told So Far, which is a story. You can see the scientific community going one direction. The right answer was somewhere else. And they tend to go together as a herd. But eventually, the science overcomes the biases of
scientists. Because it's a method.
The method.
It's not an answer.
To prove yourself wrong is a central part of science. To ask questions and be willing to prove yourself and spend as much time, as Richard Feynman used to say, showing you're wrong as you may be right. And eventually, letting the data direct you to the answer. And so it is true that individual scientists have many, many issues and often go on the wrong track, but the science keeps us honest.
We'll be back in a moment with guest Lawrence Krauss in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're here with physicist Lawrence Krauss. We're talking about kind of politics and science and how they mix or don't mix. I have a couple of takeaways from what you just said. First of all, expectation of scientific consensus. My sense is from what you said and from what I said, you never get 100%. You get 95.5. I can say if you got 90.10, you have kind of scientific consensus.
The consensus, I hate to use that, even that argument, because it doesn't matter what the scientific consensus is. It's what the results tell us. And so it is true that I think you're right. You're interviewing people, and people will, even people who agree, may have caveats. You know, they may feel the question is not clear enough. Mm-hmm. And so
a failing of our industry. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually there, and even, you know, if you ask people but basic aspects of science, things that are well, take theory of gravity. I mean, it's pretty well established theory, general relativity.
But it's just a theory, right? Well, let's deal with that.
That's a good point. I mean, the nomenclature, the words scientists use are different than the words the public use or the meaning of those words. Theory is about as good as you can get.
Yeah.
Quantum theory, which governs the microphones and all the devices we're using right now, you couldn't run this program without quantum mechanics, but it's called quantum theory. It's not as so it's just a theory. A theory is a set of ideas that have been tested and tested and tested over time and proved to work.
It's as good as you get.
It's as good as you get. But take gravity, which is, you know, general relativity. There are many people who think, well, gravity, general theory of relativity has to be changed at some level, and there are different ideas about it. So there are always people who are looking for, and there should be, people who are constantly questioning explanations of things. And so when you poll the scientific community, there are always some people who are saying, well, you know what, you know, that's probably right, but I'm willing to say that, you know, I'm willing to go out on my limb and try and look at something heretical. I've done it, and sometimes I've been right and sometimes I've been wrong. You know, I years ago said there was energy in empty space. It seemed absolutely crazy, and I only said it because it was heretical, and I thought some of the data that supported it was probably wrong, but it turned out to be right. I mean, and then there are many other times when I've been wrong. So it's just
You're explaining an extraneous – you're explaining a case that doesn't fit the model, right?
Well, yeah, I mean – that's another important thing that we often say. Sometimes you say if a theory fits all the data, there's some problem because some of the data is wrong. and it's really important to realize that the data and first time experiments are done, often they're wrong because it's hard to do. And that's why we need to confirm results. And so I'm often a little upset or not upset. I don't get upset about these kind of thing anymore, but I used to. But concerned that someone produces an experiment that produces a wild result, and it gets media. And the media, you know, the university produces a press release, and the media pick it up. And the next week, of course, we show it's wrong, but it never gets back in the media. And then 2 weeks later, someone does something, which, of course, is, you know, contradicts the first thing. But people think it tends to make people think science is a fad, that this week scientists think this, next week they think that. Take GMOs, you know. Oh, this week, they're, you know, scientists say they're not a problem, but next week they'll say they're a problem. They've seen it in certain areas of science, which, by the way, especially in medicine, are extremely hard to get definitive answers because you're dealing with human population, and studies may involve 10 or 12 individuals, not like physics where we can look at a billion events in a particle accelerator. And therefore, it's really hard to get more than tentative data because you can't control the systems as well. You can't control people as well as you can elementary particles or stars even. And so there are lots of times in medicine where a tentative result is overthrown, and that convinces people that scientific knowledge is also tentative. The big misunderstanding is that scientific revolutions don't do away with everything that went before them, because anything that survived the test of experiment can't be wrong. Newton's laws have been supplanted by general relativity, but if I hold a ball up in the studio and let it go, it's going to fall, and it's going to fall according to Newton's laws, because that has been verified by experiment. The new theories, whether it's a quantum theory of gravity or general relativity, will change things around the edges, but it's never going to say a ball will fall up. Mm. And so so things that have survived the test of experiment can never be shown to be wrong. They can be subsumed in new knowledge.
Or we may learn that what we once knew is really a special case of some larger phenomenon.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. a special case of some larger phenomenon, but it can't be wrong per se because it correctly explains things. It must have some elements of truth in it.
Have you seen, I sent you a link to a study, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it. The gist of it was how false news travels faster.
I know the study. I saw it. It's really kind of a very interesting study. It didn't really surprise me in a sense, because if you're making false news, you can make it more salacious, you can make it more sexy.
It's more interesting.
It's going to make it sound more interesting, and it's going to capture people's imaginations. You can say, you know, man bites dog, and mm-hmm. people want to read about it.
Yeah. You know, if it just says what I already knew, it's ho-hum. If it's everything you believed is now false, here's something that goes completely the other way, you send it to 100 of your friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you, if you're making it up, you can make it as interesting as you want.
Okay, we will be back with Lawrence Krauss in just a moment in the Think Tank on KTR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with physicist Lawrence Krauss in the Think Tank, and we've been discussing the use of or the relationship between scientific method, scientific approach, and politics. And scientists, as you've discussed, have been beaten up a lot. I ran across a really interesting clip the other day. There is a cancer doctor who is running for Congress on a pro-science platform, which I must say I haven't heard before.
Well, yeah, no, in fact, I haven't. I mean, there have been two PhD physicists I know in Congress, but they haven't, you know, they've been not running on a pro-science platform. But everyone should be running on a pro-science platform. That would be really good, because ultimately, and you know, the interesting thing is many people claim they are when they're not, of course.
But well, let's listen to what is, there's a clip from a larger commercial. It was probably an internet one, but I've clipped out about a minute of it.
Let's hear it.
I know a little something about cancer. And let me tell you, there's a cancer eating away at America. That cancer is ignorance, willful ignorance.
Give us a question. No, Mr. President, you're attacking us.
You are fake news.
Using the committee's subpoena power to harass scientists.
This list of seven terms are forbidden. Fetus, evidence-based, and science-based.
A deliberate attack on science, on reason, on facts.
Let us demand that educators around America teach evolution not as fact, but his theory.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
You could almost ignore it.
1,000 residences as the flames turned fatal.
The consequences weren't so dire, and so many people wouldn't suffer as a result.
16 people linked to a megachurch northwest of Dallas have now contracted measles.
How is it that 30,000 Americans die every year from gun violence, but we aren't allowed to do research on it? How is it that politicians all over the country are trying to regulate conversations between women and their doctors about critical healthcare decisions? And how is it that the maternal mortality rate is higher right here in Texas than it is in Iraq and Russia? And how can it be that despite storm after storm of ever-increasing intensity, we have an EPA that denies the existence of climate change
with the global warming
and is actually purging scientists from its ranks?
Well,
my guess is he got your vote.
Well, I think the issues he brought up are really important ones and really important to raise. So it's nice. I've heard other people do it. The interesting thing when you say he's got my vote, it's kind of interesting. One of the problems, we've often wondered why we can't be more effective in the scientific community in getting things across. Mm-hmm. The problem is that scientists aren't single-issue voters. So they're not like anti-abortion voters. Mm-hmm. They may agree with a candidate statement about one thing, but they'll judge it on the basis of many, many things, so that you can't rely on scientists to to vote one way or another based on single issues. A pro-science candidate would certainly be attractive to many scientists, I hope attracted many members of the public. What he really was, and this is the important thing, what he was stating in my mind was when you say you're pro-science, what do you mean by that? What you mean, I think, rationally, is you're pro-reality. You're a reality candidate. You're pro not distorting reality and accepting the evidence for what it is, wherever it takes you. You know, when you talk about the science candidate, it occurred to me, I just saw this movie, Isle of Dogs. You should see it, but I don't want to advertise your program. But the interesting thing is that the opposition candidate is the science party candidate I won't give it away. But I was amazed in there because the science party candidate and was, again, in this movie, marginalized by propaganda. Mm-hmm. And propaganda is effective. And one of the reasons, you know, another aspect, I think, is that I've said this again in the past, but I think it was Goebbels or Goering who said, it doesn't matter, democracy or dictatorship. You want to make people do what you want them to do, just make them afraid. Mm-hmm. And I think this fear factor is a huge part. Constantly presenting an enemy, immigrants or terrorists, and people, what people effectively do is make them afraid of science. That science is going to, as the people in Scott Pruitt's type would say, if science is going to destroy the economy because it's going to make us, you know, get rid of gas guzzling cars, and we need gas guzzling cars so that Detroit can make more cars and the economy can do well. So So constantly you can effectively marginalize science and scientists by somehow appealing to people's concerns and fears, or that science will, you know, doesn't want you to believe in God. You can find lots of ways to make science appear like it's
against people's values.
Against people's values. And what we really have to try and do a better job of, and it sounds awful to say it, but it's true, is that the universe doesn't care what your values are. The universe, what you want or what we desire, it operates the way it does. And if we ignore that at our peril, we put our heads in the sand when a tidal wave is coming. It doesn't help that not believing it. As a very famous science fiction, Philip K. Dick, a science fiction writer, used to say, reality is that which continues to exist even when you stop believing in it.
I want to throw out at you a couple of the things that sort of here's how we diss scientists. Okay. We say, what you hear in the discourse, you hear things like, that's just career enhancing.
Well, you know,
they're making money.
They're making money. I mean, to some extent, both of those are valid concerns. Mm-hmm. We should be skeptical. I'm not, look, mm-hmm. We should be skeptical of everything we hear. That's the point of science. So there are some concerns I do have. For example, many universities, you know, in a time where there's increasing competition for federal funds or private funds, they tend to promote the results of scientists who are in the university mm-hmm. or at that institute, and by press releases. And then what happens, especially since many, many newspapers have gotten rid of their science journalists, when it's reported, essentially the press release is picked up and becomes a story. Mm-hmm. And so it's science by press release.
And you've got superficial treatment and the thing you mentioned before about, well, that seems to conflict with this.
Exactly. You not only get superficial treatment, but there is a concern that, if they get attention, then it will help in the competition for federal funds. So if you have a big story, then it might help. So there is some concern. You should be concerned about that and be skeptical. In various industries, happily, in the physics I do, there's no economic large amounts of money to be made. But say pharmaceutical questions, mm-hmm. you have to be concerned about when you're hearing the results of some quote unquote scientist, whether it's a cancer study or something else. There's huge amounts of money to be made. Then people should be skeptical. But as the publisher of the New York Times once said, and I've heard it, he wasn't the first one to say this, but he's the one I first learned it from, which said, I'd like to keep an open mind, but not so open that my brains fall out. So the idea is we all have to protect ourselves. It's incredibly important in this age that we teach young people in a different way than we taught their parents, because it used to be that schools were places where you got knowledge. Knowledge is irrelevant. I have more facts in my iPhone than I ever had in school, but I also
a lot of them are wrong.
A lot more misfacts. Mm-hmm. What we have to teach kids and adults is how to tell the difference. What are the tools? So, you know, to be skeptical of what you read, to look for different sources, to find it, to see if sources are credible by seeing if they agree with stuff that you know to be true. All of these, these are the kind of tools that scientists use to make progress. And we desperately need that kind of training for adults. Why not just so they can make better decisions in their personal life, but they're going to be voters and they're going to be making decisions on the people who are going to make public policy. And in this world, if you can't tell the difference between the false stuff that's coming in the internet and the true stuff, you're at a significant disadvantage. And we're already seeing that now. And so I'm hoping we, in some ways, do a better job training the next generation that is going to have to deal with a world where false facts become ever more well packaged. You have to use the tools of science, of skepticism, of constant questionings, of checking against facts, looking at different sources, all of that in order to determine what's right.
A lot of the discourse in politics seems to be the stronger argument is a tribal one, you know, rather than here's my position. It's like I'm one of you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, we see politicians playing to their base, as you'd say, and tribalism is very effective. We ran a meeting on it recently, and xenophobia in groups and out groups is very effective. So appealing, saying I'm one of you is look, politicians use politicians of all stripes use emotion. We don't base politics on rationality, but the public has to be trained enough to try and at least cut through the emotion and ask themselves questions about what does that really mean, and does that coincide with we can't be experts in everything, so we have to rely on other things. But we can say, does what I'm reading agree with what I already know to be true at some level? We all have to be scientific literate at some level, at some basic level. Is this true? Does bringing a snowball into the Senate on a particularly cold day make any sense to imply that global warming isn't happening? Is that a rational thing, or is that just a piece of theater? Those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I've heard discussed in this area is that, you know, oftentimes causality is not just A causes B, that it's systems thing. And when you try to make an argument for a systems thing, you lose people. Causes B causes C, and that comes around. Why can, for example, global warming cause more freezing in certain places?
Yeah, well, that's the point is that things are, simple sound bites are not the way the world works. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, when I'm interviewed by journalists, they always want to say, this is the case. And we say, and the point is, in science, things are either likely or unlikely. So you're saying, you can say, well, you know, it's extremely likely that this is the case. And they don't want to hear that. But that's the way scientists work. You'd say the data suggests this. And uncertainty, for example, is another thing. Uncertainty is viewed as a bad thing among the public. But in the science, uncertainty is one of the best things you can have, because science is one of the only places where uncertainty is quantified. So we know precisely how likely the result is. And so nothing is exact in the world. And nothing is, and difficult questions don't necessarily have simple answers. And so it's hard often to get through the noise, which wants 5-second sound bites, to say, well, the situation is actually a little more sophisticated than that. It's always been a problem.
We'll be back. Final segment with Lawrence Krauss in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with physicist Lawrence Krauss and discussing the use of science and the intersection of science and politics. I'm thinking about kind of there's things about the nature of science that make it difficult to fully utilize in a political context. And one of the things that comes to mind is, we expect our politicians to come up with answers, solutions to everything. And the guy who gets up and says either A, I don't know, or B, it's complicated. It's pretty hard to sell that guy and compare to the guy who says, you know, it's just do this.
Yeah. You know, in fact, and you again made a very important point. Not knowing is incredibly important. We all should be more proud of not knowing. And parents and teachers, you know, if you're a parent, a kid asks you a question, you want to be able to give the answer, but it's, and same with teachers, but isn't it better to not only admit you don't know, but say, let's try and find out. Because the part of the excitement of life and the reason I'm a scientist is not knowing, because it means there's more to learn. And And I'd much rather be uncertain of something than falsely certain of something, mm-hmm. right? And
probably more harm done.
More harm than being falsely certain. And many of us have many of us in our lives have experienced that. You know, being absolutely certain of something, it's wrong, and it comes back to bite you. And it does in the long run because you can't fool Mother Nature. And so not knowing is something, and again, in schools, I think because many, my suspicion, and I think science teachers are, teachers in general are very important, so I don't want to be taken to be putting them down anyway. But many science teachers don't have a training in science. That's the first thing. They're uncomfortable material. They're working out of a curriculum.
It's hard to get people with science background to go into teaching.
Yeah, it is, because there are many other jobs. I think it's a problem. But what it means is if you're not comfortable material, you're hesitant to say, I don't know. You're hesitant to go outside the curriculum. But the best thing the teacher should be doing is saying, I don't know, because let's find out. Because then learning becomes a voyage of discovery. Every time a student sees something for the first time, it's the first time in the history of the world, as far as they're concerned, that that's been understood. And that's the joy of learning and the joy of discovery is what we really should be promoting and providing kids the tools to do that. So how do we find out? We look for sources. We test them. We skeptically ask questions. We see if the explanation makes sense. So that's what we should be teaching. Yeah, of course, we need to teach writing and some basic level of mathematics. But beyond that, the material itself in schools, I think, is not as important as getting kids excited about that learning process. And it starts with, I don't know.
I love the idea of skepticism, but what we often get is not skepticism, but cynicism.
Yeah.
You can lie with statistics is one of the popular, you can lie without them as well.
Exactly. And you can lie more effectively without them maybe, but absolutely. I think it's part of that thing about keeping an open mind, but that's open their brain falls out. You can't say, well, you know, all scientists, you know, they're all those climate scientists.
That's cynicism.
Yeah, that's cynicism. And they call themselves sometimes climate skeptics, and it's the wrong word. I was at a debate in Mexico. It was a really important question. They like to say they're skeptics, but they're cynics. And they're not even that. They're deniers. But to argue somehow, for example, that this entire community of climate scientists – who don't make any more money, whether the world is heating up or cooling down or whatever, is somehow conspiring to give false evidence, while the Koch brothers, who make a tremendous amount of money
by burning fossil fuels,
that they have no vested interest in trying to convince you that... Or the guys they hire. Yeah. And more money is spent, and this is part of the problem, more money is spent on media and public relations by just those people than the entire budget of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change,
and they have
scientists who are actually looking.
And they have the additional advantage is that if you're arguing we can just burn stuff now in relative terms, right at this moment, it's cheaper energy.
Yeah, and you know it's immediate gains against long-term issues, and it's hard. That's another thing about climate change and certain other things. It's hard to get people to look long-term down the road, and we're seeing it in many ways that the budgets that are going on will put the problems down the road because 10-20 years doesn't matter. And I think it is a lot easier to appeal to people's instant gratification, instant concerns, and we need more and more. We are in a position globally in the world right now where we have to change the way we think. Einstein said when the first nuclear weapons went off, everything's changed save the way we think. We still haven't changed the way we thought about nuclear weapons in many ways. But more than that, we have to be willing to think globally because these issues can't be solved by one country or another. And we have to be willing to say the things we're doing now do have an irrevocable impact in principle 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And we have a responsibility now for our children and grandchildren to do something about it. And I do think that's the argument that may resonate, that people care about their children and grandchildren. And if some way we can get them to realize that the actions they're taking now have an immediate, clear impact on the quality of life of their children and grandchildren, maybe we can make some progress.
And you and I are both old enough that the whole climate change and all that probably has a marginal impact in our lifetimes, I mean, a little cleaner air, and I've got asthma, it may be a little bit aggravated, but in the scheme of things, may not be an investment with the payoff in my lifetime. But children, grandchildren?
Yeah, although I think actually we're seeing climate change. I think actually, even for us, will have is already having effects in our life.
Depending
where we live. You're right. It's not, and it's not going to.
If you live in New Orleans or Florida,
it's not going to. Yeah, well, it's New Orleans or Florida. Yeah, you should. Yeah, your beach property is going to change, but it's not going to be life. It's not going to change civilization in the sense of make us extinct. And I worry when I hear people overstress the concerns, because then people, whenever you cry wolf, people get concerned. Mm-hmm. We have to be willing to be accurate and say what we don't know, mm-hmm. but point out the potential problems are so severe that you might say, even if we're not accurate about that, the potential problem is so severe. What do we lose by developing new technologies that will actually enhance our economy and at the same time avoid that potential problem? There doesn't seem to be a downside. So I think that's the other thing. People don't like to be pessimistic. So I think if we emphasize these are problems that are solvable. In fact, many of them are problems that are technologically solvable.
And
we
just technological solutions are way easier than human behavior
change
solutions.
Exactly. That's right. What we need is a political solution, and that's much harder.
Yeah, it's a whole lot easier to talk the guy into putting an electric battery in his SUV as opposed to driving in a Mini Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. And so... And a lot of these problems, I mean, technology is good. I mean, of course, it brings out a lot of bad things. But, you know, without technology, without science technology, not only would we not be having this discussion, but many of the people who are listening to the discussion, if there are any, would not be alive. So we should rely on technological solutions, but we need the political will to manage them appropriately.
Thank you very much. Enlightening, as always, Lawrence Krauss. You can find this and other podcasts archived, most recent ones at ktar.com. If you want to listen to our earlier interview with Lawrence Krauss, that's at mikeoneill.org. You'll have to click through. I think it's approximately, they were ordered by date, I think it was March of 2016.
Oh, okay. So, I couldn't remember what it was. Okay.
I looked it up. I didn't remember either. Thank you very much.
That's
we'll
great.
See you next week in the Think Tank.
Thanks.